Welcome to Tilly's Trans Tuesdays. This week we have Trans History 3, interview with Alex L. Combs and Andrew Eckett, creators of the graphic novel Trans History from Ancient Times to the Present Day. Hi, I'm Tilly Bridges, your host, and I'm joined by my writing partner, my best friend, my wife, our token cis representation, the lady who puts the graphic in my novel, Susan Bridges.
Hello!
Our guests this week are Alex L. Combs and Andrew Eckett, a married trans couple and creative team living in the San Francisco Bay Area. Making a graphic novel about trans history was a dream project, and they can't wait for more people to read the good news. Trans people are not new, and we are here to stay. Welcome, Alex and Andrew.
Hi, Kelly.
Oh, that was nice. You kind of harmonized in there. It was really good.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Of course. I'm so excited to get to talking about your book. But first, I want to help folks out there that are listening get to know you a little bit better. So I wanted to ask, for the two of you, what do you think has been the best thing about transitioning?
To me, definitely the best thing is just getting to openly live and express a part of myself that is essentially a dream come true. That
yeah.
There was a point that I thought it was just a secret or a few people might sort of know. I never thought here I would be at 40 years old getting to just share that part of myself with the world.
Yeah, it's magic actually getting to just be yourself every day, right? You wake up and you're like, I get to do this again. I just get to be me. It's so cool.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's pretty much, my answer wouldn't be much different from that. It's just that having the life that I didn't really know was possible, become a real possible thing that makes me part of society in a way I didn't feel like I was before, because I was in this like limbo, this identity limbo.
Yeah, and absolutely. Then,
like, yeah, knowing who I am and being who I am, it's definitely made everything different. There's a before transitioning and after transitioning, and it's like night and day. And yeah. I'm glad to be in the day.
Yeah. Oh, you said it so perfectly. Oh, my heart. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly right. Because like, you know, pre-transition, it just felt like everything was so dull and muted and awful. And, you know, it was just like, you didn't know that everyone didn't feel that way at first. You know, you're like, this is just what life is, right? And no, it's not. And it doesn't have to be that way. And that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So on the other side of that, are there aspects of transitioning that you found to be particularly difficult to deal with?
Now, I know.
You have one.
I do have one.
And I think we all something, do.
This is something I don't hear talked about enough, I feel like.
Yeah.
And that is the amount of paperwork and bureaucracy involved after you change your name.
Yes, there's so much.
The havoc that was wreaked upon my credit report, and it's just a lot. We focus a lot on just getting it done, which is great. Like getting the name change is great. But then I feel like we're kind of left out there to try to figure out, well, what do I do now? Because it's not like everyone knows that your name has changed. You know, the credit card companies don't know. The credit report companies, all these accounts don't know. And they all have different methods and protocols and processes for changing names. And some of them are quicker on their feet than others. Some lose the paperwork more often than others. And that's something I think that it's just to kind of brace yourself for that even after you've done that bureaucracy of changing your name with Social Security and the government and getting a driver's license, there's a whole other step that I'm not even done with. And it's been a long time. So that's what I, bureaucracy.
Yeah, it's something that just goes on. You don't know how much there is that has your legal name on it, that once you change that, you just, it's just like, oh God, another thing. Oh no, another one. I've got to come out to another group of strangers through an email and say, hey, fix your company stuff for me. So,
or then you get something weird years later.
Yeah.
Pops up with your dead name on it. And it's just out of nowhere. And you're like, what the hell?
I didn't even remember these people. And now they have my wrong name. And do I care? Is this worth it to fix with them? And
that mental calculus of,
Yeah, there's so much.
What about you, Alex?
I'm just going to go with a simple answer, transphobia. It's awful.
It's the worst. It's the worst.
Can we just stop?
Right? It's not hard. We're not hurting anybody. Just leave us alone.
I know, right? Sheesh.
Have you tried not sucking? They have not. That might give it a shot.
That should be step one.
I am making a suggestion.
Yeah.
Okay, well, if you had any advice for people just starting their transitions, what would it be? Or maybe even what do you wish you knew going in ahead of time? Like, is there some piece of advice you wish someone had given you that would have helped you a lot?
I think my advice would be to really get to know yourself as well as possible. Like, while you're learning about trans things and thinking about coming out and getting excited about the possibilities, don't neglect the parts of you that have nothing to do with trans stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it can be really tempting to find a label and feel like that kind of explains everything.
Sure.
But the label is that's a shorthand for something that's a lot more complex and nuanced. Like, and I wish it were easy enough to just find the people who have the same label as you, and those are your people. But it really isn't that. And I think that's some advice I guess I would give is don't just think that labels are everything. Try to get to know yourself on a more nuanced individual level.
Yeah, I think that's great, because there's also, like, you may find a label that you feel fits you or mostly fits you, but you may find that none of them do. And that's okay, too. You know, we're all individuals, and you don't have to conform to anyone else's expectations of whatever flavor of trans you are is.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I guess mine would just be that don't feel pressure to reach any kind of endpoint. I feel like that's just a common sort of pressure or misconception, or at least it was when I was coming out, probably still is. And it's not that people have a bad intention thinking it, but I just remember, like, I was taking some photos. I was doing like a photo shoot, like partway after I'd been on hormones, but I hadn't had top surgery, and I wanted to like get some like glamour shots. And my photographer was like, oh, well, I want to get you like before and after. I'm like, well, this is after. This is me. And she was like trying to, just be really supportive. But yeah, just try not to feel like, that would be my advice to trans people just coming out. Like, try not to feel like there's necessarily a set end goal.
Yeah. It's a journey, and it's about finding yourself along the way. And you may, who knows where it's going to end if it ever does. It may be a lifetime journey for most of us, and that's okay.
Yeah. Everyone changes over time and context and everything. So what's working at one point might not always be how you feel. You might want to change your pronouns again. It doesn't matter. It's fine.
Yeah. That's all cool. Whatever you decide at the beginning or you think is right doesn't have to be the final thing. You can still adjust as you go.
Or it can be, but it doesn't have to be.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Okay, before we get into talking about your book, do you want to let folks know where they can find you online if they'd like more information after listening?
Sure. I have a website that's just my name, alexlcombs.com. And any social media that I'm on is also alexlcombs.com. I have a blue sky. I have a Instagram. Those are the ones I'm most active on.
And I'm not active on anything, so don't look for me.
Oh, wow.
You're smarter than all the rest of us.
I post pictures of.
Yeah, but he does post pictures of me. Yeah, so my face shows up occasionally.
Okay. Well, I have done two previous episodes on trans history. For those listening, you may want to check out Trans History 1, How and Why We Name Trans People in History in episode 79, and Trans History 2, Examples of Trans People in History in episode 80. which leads us right into talking about this fabulous new book, Trans History, a Graphic Novel from Ancient Times to the Present Day. It releases on May 13th, 2025, and can be pre-ordered right now on bookshop.org. There is a link to it in the show notes. Hit that up because I'm not reading out a whole URL. Okay, here's part of the description. What does trans mean, and what does it mean to be trans? Diversity in human sex and gender is not a modern phenomenon, as readers will discover through illustrated stories and records. In addition to individual profiles, the book explores some of the societal roles played by trans people beginning in ancient times and shows how European ideas about gender were spread across the globe. It explains how the science of sexology and the growing acceptance of and backlash to gender nonconformity have helped to shape what it means to be trans today. Illustrated conversations with modern activists, scholars, and creatives highlight the breadth of current trans experiences and give readers a deeper sense of the diversity of trans people, a group numbering in the millions. All right, I want everybody listening to know that I was sent an ARC of this book to read, and I thought it was fantastic and so badly needed right now. And it makes learning about our history so incredibly accessible, and that's huge because history can often be daunting to some people, doubly so when you want to learn about trans folks, who are often erased from history for reasons I talked about back in Trans History 1. So I think I want to start by asking the two of you, what made you want to write this book? Where did it come from?
So I actually went to art school for comics. And at that time, around 2017, I knew I wanted to do potentially something with LGBTQIA plus history, but I didn't know what. I ended up doing more of a autobiographical slice of life kind of comic for my thesis for school. But right after graduation, I had that desire to go back to history. And living in San Francisco, there's a lot of great archives. And we have the LGBT History Archives and Museum.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
Or the GLBT.
Yeah, GLBT, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can like make an appointment and go look in their archives. And so we did that because we learned that Lou Sullivan, who was a local gay trans man in San Francisco in the 80s and 90s, he kept a diary his entire life and donated them all to the GLBT Historical Society. And you can just go read them. And it's like from when he was like a little kid, like all the way up to the end of his life, basically. And it's so cool. So we went there, and there is now a really great collection of his diaries that's been published. But at the time, that wasn't out yet. So it just like was so exciting to go in there and get access to this really amazing resource. And so I made a zine about it, which I took to I took that one to SF Zine Fest, or maybe it was an East Bay Zine Festival, and was just giving them out. I was just so excited to share this story.
That's so pure. That is adorable.
I love it.
Yeah, it was really fun. And I just had so much energy for it. And Andrew and I have both done the research together. And much like how we did with our book, like I illustrated it, but he did a lot of art direction and helped with the writing. And we had so much energy and enthusiasm. And it was just so rewarding that we were like, we just want to keep doing trans history. Let's just do a trans history book. Like there's comics out there that look at queer history or like LGBTQIA, like two-spirit plus history. But we were like, we want to do one that's trans history, like and specifically.
Yeah, there's a lot of misconceptions specifically around trans history.
Oh, yeah.
That are related to the misconceptions around larger queer history, but felt like a lot of queer history projects would have one or two trans people in it, but never really be able to delve into what's going on with trans people and history. So that was one reason it felt really particularly important to just spend however many hundred pages just on trans people specifically.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really beautiful to read, to just see so many of them in there and see our history going back so far, you know? And yeah. I wanted to ask, do you feel like there's something about the comic graphic novel format that lent itself better to this project? Because like we write comics too, and they're such a unique sort of art form all on their own. They're so different from everything else. And do you feel that that helped with what you were trying to do?
Oh, absolutely. Because you can put maximum amount of information into a comic because you've got the visuals and the writing.
Yeah.
So it really lends itself to packing in a lot of information without like making people have to read like, paragraph upon paragraph of like describing, you know, and this is what the scene looks like. It's like they just can glance at it and know what the scene looks like.
Yeah.
And it only takes a split second.
And I also like how it kind of softens the history aspect. You know, history can be kind of intimidating to people or yeah. sound dry, or this must be very technical. It doesn't have to be. And there are some complex concepts in the book, but I feel like the visual style is welcoming.
It is.
If you're afraid of history, you don't have to be afraid of history. It's a graphic novel. See? It's fun.
It is a fun, breezy read, and it's so educational, and I love it. It's a joy to read that book. I can't wait to see it in color.
I can't tell you like how happy it makes me to hear you say those words like breezy, like easy to read. Like we yeah. wanted that so much, and educational. Okay, great.
Right.
Yeah. You're getting the information, but it doesn't feel like a slog.
Right.
Like that's what we wanted. And to hear you saying that, it's just like so exciting.
Yeah, I think that's an issue that I think a lot of books about history can accidentally fall into, even if they're not intending it, because it can be a very scholarly thing. You know, you're talking about totally. So many different things and contexts and details from history that people don't know about. And I think a lot of people do get intimidated that way. But when you read this book with the art and the way it just flows from page to page, and you're learning about all of these trans people that have always existed and always been here with us, and it's fun and it's exciting, and it's just page after page, you're just flipping through it. It goes so quick and in a really good way. And so I think you've done a really great job at making this accessible, not just to other adults, but I think like kids especially can, like trans kids can see this and they can say, people like me have always existed, and they can learn about it. It's not going to be inaccessible to them even. You know, there's concepts in there that maybe they won't fully understand, but they're going to get so much out of it that it's, I don't know, that's like could change a kid's life. You know, it's really, really amazing that you put that out there.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. We wanted it to be kind of like all ages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the information is important to everyone. It can change trans people and cis people. It's history that no one is really learning in a cohesive, clear way. And I think it benefits everyone to get what they can out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you touched on this a little bit before, but the book is extensively researched. And I know how difficult and frustrating it can be to find information, much less accurate information, on trans people from the past. You know, due to the presumption of cisness that a lot of historians view the world through, or their inability to see or choice to outright ignore or hide the transness that's right in front of them. So how tough was the research process for you of finding all of these people? Did you have difficulty locating accurate information that you could pull from?
I was actually kind of surprised at how much I was able to find that was accessible. A lot of it was transphobic, but yeah. It was there. I mean, and you have to just read it with a grain of salt, you know?
Yep.
But then at the same time, a lot of the research that I used, I was surprised to see how much had just come out in the past maybe like 3 years or something before we started researching it, like between the years of like 2017 and 2019 when we pitched the book. Like people have been working on this. They've been putting together the raw information. They've been writing papers. I have access to the San Francisco Public Library, so I have access to JSTOR and all these other academic journals that they pay for, which is awesome because they're a really great library. And I was surprised at just like how much I could find online. I use the Internet Archive a lot. They had a lot of free books right now. Only as of very recently, they have had to shut off access to a lot of those books that I actually used. Like, because right now I'm working on the extended bibliography and I wanted to put links where people could go read the books.
Yeah.
I would say like, this book isn't accessible except for if you have print disabilities. So they had been like sued.
Yeah.
Like a while back for having the online library. But I think they're working on it. Hopefully the books will be back up and I'm putting all those links that I can find for those for people on the extended bibliography, which is not up yet, but will be up on my website by the time the book comes out.
Yeah. In one of my past episodes about trans history, I talked to some trans historians that were talking about the difficulty that they've had in the field, you know, because all of the rules for what you are and aren't supposed to do as a historian were established by basically all cis white men. And so that there's been a big pushback in recent years from trans historians trying to make progress through all of that. And so it rings
it
absolutely true.
Off.
Yeah. You say like in the past couple of years, there's suddenly so much more. So yeah, they're fighting the good fight for us all out there.
Yeah, I'd be like, oh my God, this article is amazing. When was this written? Oh, like last year. Okay.
Yeah. That was another thing that made it so exciting about getting the book out. It's like, well, the information's there. People just need to be able to read it in a form that's not a scholarly article.
Right. That is most people can't find. And if they do, it's going to be very intimidating to read. So
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you've done a really good job translating that, I think, into sort of everyday stories that people can easily absorb and understand. So that's really cool. Did you run into any problems finding a publisher? Because I know trans projects can often have trouble getting past cis gatekeepers, you know, and finding a home. I've had that difficulty with some of the stuff that we write. And I was just wondering if you encountered any roughness there.
I'm happy to say no. We got a really good offer. Right away, we didn't get a lot of offers, but the one that I think we had like two, but
that's better
the
than
one
none.
That we ended up going with.
It was like two or three or something. Yeah.
The one we ended up going with, they were amazing.
Candlewick.
Candlewick Press. Turns out we got like their best editor. I had a feeling that she was like really good while we were working with her. And then we met like some more of the staff and they were like, oh, yeah. Andrea, yeah, she's like really, really good. Okay. So I think in a way we just either got really lucky.
Yes.
Or yeah. I think also maybe they were sort of like on the beat of maybe they had already had discussions about picking up a similar book.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But it certainly seemed like they were all on board.
They were on board from the beginning and were really supportive, which was something we kept kind of doubting, you know, as
we
kept thinking,
understandable.
As the political situation got worse and worse and things are getting weirder and weirder. And we're just like, are they going to drop us? Are they going to decide this isn't worth it? If anything, their support seemed to strengthen.
That's so great.
So that was that has a lot to do with, I think, how good the book is right now, is that their Candlewick Press was very supportive.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. But it's also cool to hear you talk about the magic of a good editor, because wow, the things that they can do, right? Like they're angels from above.
I completely agree. That's what it felt like.
Okay, so in the course of putting this book together, did either of you have a favorite historical trans person, somebody that you really connected with or were drawn to over the course of making it?
One favorite?
Every single one that I was studying at the time that I was most obsessed with it.
Yeah.
You can have a lot of favorites.
That's true.
Though, there is Mikey.
I was going to say Hatshepsut.
Hatshepsut?
Because it was so... Okay, like many... I don't know, Western, like, white people, I guess. Like, I grew up obsessed with ancient Egypt, or at least maybe not obsessed, but I was just, like, so enchanted by it. Saw Stargate when I was in middle school. I was terrible at that. Like, culturally not accurate at all, but like I would look at all the Egyptian stuff in the museums whenever I would get a chance, and I would try to like draw some of it and just like kind of, you know, let it like take my imagination. So when we studied about Hatshepsut, the pharaoh, it was like, okay, I knew it was like sort of a controversial like figure, because some people like throughout the history of sexology, even going all the way back to Magnus Hirschfeld in Germany, had speculated that Hatshepsut was a trans masculine person. And there's actually been like debate, like a fair amount of debate about it, I guess, between in small circles, I guess. But like, so I kind of went in like, okay, like this is probably, I'm probably going to find like that this was not similar to like a modern trans person at all. And, you know, it was probably like all politically motivated and stuff. And certainly like, you know, political motivation is completely inseparable from this story of this pharaoh, because you're a pharaoh. But the more I like, the more details I read, I was just like, the more I was like, this person does not seem like a cis person. Like,
yeah.
And I kept trying to like
talk yourself out of it.
Into it, like, you know, stepping way back from it. But then I kept reading more and more details and being like, none of this refutes this not being a cis person. And in fact, I feel like I could like almost relate to some of these things. So like I just feel like I got really, really obsessed into that story. And I would love to go see some of the statues. I think they're at like the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Yeah, I think they have like a huge collection there.
Yeah, that's amazing, because I'm doing this really big research project on a person from history who may have been trans. Not until it's done. People know who I'm talking about if they follow me.
You mentioned it on social media. All right.
You know, I keep doing the same thing where I'm reading lifelong diaries and letters and things that this person wrote. And I would see things and be like, wow, that is so trans. And, you know, I put it down, I read something else. And then I'm like, were they really though? Were they really that trans? And I pick up the next thing. I'm like, this is so trans. So it's
yeah,
that's
exactly what happened.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think it's really funny, though, like, because it's like he spent all of this time with this woman he admired so much, and he must have been in love with her, but they never did anything. And I mean, it's just weird. Like,
yeah, like all the reports about it, you know, from cishet people will be like, well, clearly he was madly in love with this woman, despite the fact that it doesn't resemble any other form of romantic love you've ever seen. And I'm like, that's because he wanted to be her. Not okay. Anyway,
there was kind of like almost like a figure like that in Hatshepsut's life too, because there was this man, Senemut, who was like part of their family and like mothered Hatshepsut's daughter from like way like previous, before she like became pharaoh or anything. And but like Hatshepsut never got like pregnant from this person or anything, which, you know, and it was like, well, were they lovers? Or like, I'm kind of for the like queer, you know, family, like maybe, you know, queer found family, like angle almost makes more sense.
Then they were just pining for each other and nothing ever happened. And that, whatever.
Yeah, there's like these loving statues of him, like with Hatshepsut's daughter, like nurturing her, like hugging her. Just like, okay. Like, reminds me more of like a gay uncle or something situation.
But like, but it happens all the time.
Yeah.
Now, like I was like, they found some Vesuvius eruption from like 2000 years ago.
They
were like, we always assumed these people in this room were a family, but we found out none of them were related to each other.
They were five unrelated men.
They were like, they probably didn't know each other. And I'm like, they were roommates.
That's the popular thing, right? They were roommates.
Or they were just strangers taking comfort in a disaster. Or like, wild to me. Like,
it is. Yeah. Okay. Well, Andrew, what about you? Did you have anybody that was a favorite or that you really like connected with?
Did I have a favorite? I just liked all of them. Like, I kept getting,
Yeah.
it was just so fun to learn about all of them. Like, what do you think? Did you notice me having a favorite, Alex? Nope. He's like, nope. It's like I would just get excited, you know, kind of like with Alex, like
Yeah.
whoever I was working on at the time, I'd be gushing about them. Although I will say it was fun to find all the different trans mask people in history, because you
Yeah.
don't hear a lot about them usually. And
Yep.
that was fun. But then as soon as I'd start saying like, oh, he's my dude, there'd be like Lily Elba or something. And I'd be like, oh, but Lily, you know, and it's like I go, yeah, I love them all. They're like,
It's very understandable.
I can't.
One of the things that I really connected with actually was the two of you and the way that Andrew talked about sort of starting by, like, quote unquote, assisting with the book, but then became a full-on co-creator, because that's really similar to how Susan and I started writing together, and I
Oh, that's
never
awesome.
found that kind of connection with anyone before. And so that is really cool.
Oh,
Oh,
cool.
see, you're part of trans history right now.
Right. Oh, that's so rad.
Yeah, it's really cool. But I wanted to ask, is this the first project that the two of you worked on together, like to this extent, where you were sort of both co-creators of it?
The first one we finished for sure. We've you know plotted and schemed and had grand visions
Sure.
that didn't get very far in the past.
I mean, we like managed
We've
to
to do
make
smaller
some little
things.
zines
Yeah,
and
make some
stuff for
zines.
like
Yeah.
anime
Yeah,
conventions, like
that's
back in the
true.
day.
This is a more sustained effort
Yeah.
where we
I mean,
really
it's a
had to
big
figure
book.
out what our roles were and what our strengths were gonna be and how the workflow
Sure.
was gonna evolve. And so yeah, that was a huge learning process. It was very rewarding though. It made me realize just how much fun it is to work with Alex and like finish a more ambitious project.
Yeah, we get that a lot when we tell people that we write together and we're married, and they're like, how can you? I could never work with the person I married to. I could
We
never.
get that
And
less
I'm,
these
I don't
days. Maybe
understand.
because associating with better people. I don't
Maybe.
know. No, I've
But
heard people say similar stuff about
yeah,
us.
it's and like, I don't understand that. It works so good for us, and it clearly works really good for you too. So I
Yeah.
don't know.
I mean, I feel like it's a matter of luck, both luck of finding that person, but
Yeah.
also perseverance of
Yeah.
figuring out over time, just learning each other intimately and learning how you can support each other and how you can like shift responsibility in ways that you're both comfortable with,
Yeah,
that kind
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and learning, I guess learning how to fully appreciate each other's contributions in a way that
Yes.
facilitates like backing off of your own ideas.
Yes. Setting your own ego aside if they have a better idea. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that might be one of the things that gets in the way with people who are saying, how could you do
Sure.
that? Is because art can sometimes be such a personal, like
Yeah.
individualistic process that to truly collaborate and to truly let go and let it be the combined vision can that's like a next level thing, I think, sometimes.
It is. It's a really hard thing to do. You are wise. You have summed that up
Thank
perfectly.
you.
Well
Stop
done.
it. I said so in the comic.
I will not. I will never
Oh,
stop it. Never.
that's
Okay, so what is next for you two after this? Do you have another big project you're working on?
Well, I've got like some ideas of, I guess, like smaller sort of topical comics that I want to do. We definitely want to just keep doing stuff with the book and trans
Yeah,
history
yeah.
because we have, like, there was so much that we had to cut from the book that I
Yeah.
think it would be cool to share some more of that information in either comic format or some other way. Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, we definitely want to keep doing, spreading the trans history gospel. But we've also been, I personally would love to do another big project like sooner rather than later. We've been batting around ideas about conspiracy theories and just the general misinformation landscape.
Yeah.
It's like a big, of course, another big idea that would have to be broken into some sort of smaller thing.
Sure.
But that's kind of what we've been, I think we've been talking about a lot is
Yeah, I feel like that could be a big like graphic novel.
Yeah,
Yeah.
something about either why people fall into conspiracy theories, or a story of someone who did or who lost a loved one through to it, or I'm not sure exactly what, but that's what's kind of bouncing around right now,
Sure,
which
sure.
ties into trans history too, because a lot of the misinformation about trans people going around is linked to conspiracy theories.
And
Yeah.
I mean, it's not something I share a lot, but I mean, I have like family members who have gone down the conspiracy, rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And so I've like seen over the years, I've sort of had like a front row seat to some of the ways that the conspiracy theories are linked to anti-trans sentiment.
Yeah.
And they really are. Like, it's really weird. So.
Yeah. I think when you dig into them, they're sort of all wrapped up in a bunch of different bigotries. They
Yeah.
sort of commingle. There's a lot of white supremacy in them too.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I think it's really important too to one of the things I really liked were the parts of the book that talked about like different cultures and the different ways that trans people have been seen throughout history from that perspective that
Right.
isn't white, straight, hetero, Christian,
Yeah.
Catholic, and like really like that one viewpoint has just been crushed onto the entire world
Yay,
as,
colonialism.
yeah, as
Yeah.
dominant when
Yeah.
like so many other cultures honor and understand and have words for trans people
Right.
and do not think it's wrong or sinful.
It's just the way some people are.
Right.
Yeah.
I always want more on that.
Yeah,
That
sure.
was the thing that left me wanting more. I'm like, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we were like thinking about putting more of that, like a whole chapter about that in, but then we quickly realized that we would basically have to dig a lot deeper and become really proficient in these other cultures, and we just
Yeah.
weren't, and we didn't want to get
Sure.
that stuff wrong.
Yeah.
And but a
Yeah.
really good book that I can recommend if you're wanting more of that is called Before We Were Trans. Is it Kit Hayam?
I think so, yeah.
Yes, yeah,
Yeah.
I haven't read that whole book, but I've read parts of it and it is really good.
Yeah.
I referenced
And
it in
it,
one of the trans history episodes I did before.
yeah, definitely more straightforwardly goes into like details about the culture and the different cultural gender identities and stuff. Whereas in ours, we were sort of like, okay, we know this exists. We don't fully necessarily understand the subtleties and the cultural context, but we can say what the Europeans thought when they showed up and saw these people because they wrote about
Yeah,
it.
right.
And like,
Yeah.
you don't have to know all the details, as interesting as it would be to show, well, clearly these people existed.
Yeah. Well, I think it is so important for trans and non-binary people to know that we have always existed and that we're not a fad or a trend. We're just a normal way some humans can be. And this book is going to help normalize that for everyone. I think it's going to help a lot of trans folks feel seen, and hopefully a lot of cis folks know that there's nothing new about being trans. So I want to thank you both for making this book because I think it's going to help a lot of people, and you've done a really good thing.
Thank you so much. It's
Thank
so
you.
reassuring to hear you say that.
Yeah.
Well, I love this book, and I'm so glad that you were both willing to come on here and talk about it. It's been lovely having you. So thank you so much for joining us to talk about this.
Oh, it's our
Thank you. It's so
pleasure.
nice to see you again, Tilly, and to meet your wife.
Woo.
It's nice to see and meet both of you. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. Yeah.
Of course. And to the folks listening, once again, the book is Trans History from Ancient Times to the Present Day by Alex L. Combs and Andrew Eckett. Go pre-order it from bookshop.org right now. There is a link to it in the show notes. We need books like this so very much right now. It deserves your support. Read it because trans people have always been here and we're not going anywhere. Tilly Bridges, End Transmission. Tilly's Trans Tuesdays is hosted by Tilly Bridges and Susan Bridges, with audio editing and sound mixing by Jillian Morgan. The written essay version of this week's topic and all past topics is available at tillystranstuesdays.com. Special thanks to Daisy and Jane for the use of Sorry Not Sorry as our show's theme music. Please stop by and show your support at daisyandjane.bandcamp.com and soundcloud.com/daisyandjane. You can find me at Tilly Bridges on Blue Sky and on Mastodon at tillybridges@mastodon.social. And you can find Susan on those at Susan L. Bridges. You can find Jillian at Audio Jillian on Blue Sky. You can join the Tillyverse Discord server by following the link at the very bottom of tillystranstuesdays.com. We hold regular watch parties for the Matrix films and other trans movies where I do a live Q&A, and it's blossomed into a wonderfully supportive, compassionate, kind community of friends. We'd love to have you join us. If you'd like to keep up with all the writing that Susan and I do, you can sign up for our newsletter at birdguestbroadcast.com. If you enjoy this show, please take a moment to leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. The largest segment of our listeners find the show there, and more reviews equals a higher profile, which means it will reach more of the people who need it. Thank you for your support. For more information, visit pendantaudio.com. Thanks for listening.